Michigan HockeyCast 3.6, where Alex and I take off our skates and see if we can throw them 20 yards down the ice. Two weeks ago, the Lions won a game, and yesterday they almost won a game.
It depends on your term, almost.
They were within one score, and they almost recovered an onside kick. Now, just in and of itself, recovering an onside kick should mean that you win a football game, right? Like, it's so hard to recover an onside kick.
Well, that game had two really close reviews. The Marvin Jones one at the 5-yard line,
yeah.
And then the onside kick where you're just sitting there and they're showing all the angles. And in both cases, the call on the field had to stand, but it was close. I mean, that game was a classic. If you're a Lions fan, like, you knew you weren't winning that game. Like, it was tied at halftime, but you're like, okay, Green Bay is going to go up 2 touchdowns. Lions are going to score to come back and make it close-ish. And then Green Bay is getting the first down to win the game because, like, that Lions defense isn't stopping anybody.
But they had blue pants on.
I don't like the full blue outfit, personally.
No? Yeah. You prefer the silver?
Yeah, just the blue and... Not the all silver, but just the blue and silver.
Oh.
The classic.
Do they do all silver? It looks gray.
Yeah, it's all gray, really, more than silver.
Yeah, because silver would be... If you were all, like, shiny silver, I don't know. That would be a little odd.
They used to have the black jerseys.
Yeah, well, that used to be a thing in sports, remember? Like, baseball teams. Like, I'm a Mets fan, and, like, the Mets would wear black. And then they took it away.
Yeah, that used to be kind of cool, and...
Yeah.
I had a black John Kitna jersey, but...
Oh, John Kitna. I remember John Kitna.
Yeah.
He also played for the Bengals.
He played for a number of teams.
Yeah. So we could talk about the Jets, or we could talk about Michigan hockey. And right now, I feel like those are kind of the same things. So I think we get paid to talk about Michigan hockey. We can transition to that after we plug next week's hockey cast. That we need your viewer participation in. So if you have any questions or musings or wonderments, you should let us know. You can tweet at us at Nasty Island and at Alex_Drain.
Yeah, I got it this time.
Yeah. Yeah, this time I'm not trying to get people to look up your MGO blog avatar anyway. You also have an email. I think I have an email. We sometimes check our emails.
I have several emails.
You have several emails. So anyway, or you can leave it in the comment section. Or the comment section for something else. As long as you can get a hold of us in one way or another, we will answer your questions and we will delve into them deeper as much as we can. Or even if it's just terminology related, we'll still go over a bunch of stuff and, you know, sort of the basics. But if you'd like to participate in the hockey cast, maybe we can even talk Brian into sending you some cash or something. we'll discuss it later. Anyway, that needed to be said. Now, things that I guess need to be said about the Michigan-Minnesota series.
That was not fun.
I mean, it was sort of semi-anticipated because Michigan is without four forwards and arguably their most explosive defenseman. And Minnesota loses three of their top defensemen, and I thought, hey, this is okay because trying to replace half of your defense... Probably a hard thing to do. Then I got the line charts for the first game, and they still had 3 guys drafted. And I was like, how do you have like 7 guys drafted on this team just playing defense? But apparently Minnesota does. And it looked like it. Because when you watch the games, I believe the first period of the first game was relatively even. And
there was a disallowed goal. That was... And Michigan put one off the post. That's what I remember
from
the first period.
Yeah, Summers hit the post really early.
Yep. And then Minnesota scored like 5 minutes in that got called off.
Yes. And Karenin had this, like, huge blast after, like, the puck kind of trickled out of, like, a mess, and he came skating on the ice, and I was like, oh, you know, this is kind of a thing, you know, or maybe. And I think I wrote down Pasta had a chance, and Michigan was playing kind of physical, and we ended up talking in the intermission, and you're like, well, the beginning of the second period is going to be pretty big. And I said, yeah. And that's kind of when it turned.
Yeah, it was... It's an unfortunate series because Michigan's offense really dropped off without the dudes, which you were expecting. But, I mean, they still had a big chunk of the defense there. And, you know, you lose York, but I don't know, he's not a shutdown defenseman or anything, and still they just had a lot of problems defensively in both games, and especially when it came to the penalty kill, which is where the first goal came in game one there.
Yeah, they scored on sort of a, you said it hit the post and kind of came to the guy on the backside. And, well, first of all, the penalty was like a nice little slash, I think, from LaPointe, who was playing, because obviously everyone on this roster, if you can play forward, you're playing in this series. And it's kind of like in the zone, and you'd said to me, like, I don't know why he took the penalty, because he's kind of chasing
the guy. Behind
the
player,
yeah.
And there was a defenseman facing the player face
right
up. I mean,
so they kind of had him sandwiched.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to really hit a guy. He's kind of skating towards the boards anyway. It wasn't really, like, a dangerous situation.
And Minnesota did a great job. There were several slashes in the series in terms of when they got hit, they dropped the stick right away and were very good at getting those opportunities. And then once they got the opportunities, exploiting them. And again, Michigan's penalty kill didn't do a ton to stop puck movement. And just watching the penalty kills, it really felt like Michigan had two guys on the ice, or maybe three guys on the ice. You know, it didn't feel like a 5-on-4, because there was just, you know, player after player. I mean, guys totally unaccounted for.
Yeah.
And
it was like watching,
whenever there was a friendly bounce, there was someone there to put it in. And it had a, you know, it didn't feel like Michigan had four guys on the ice.
It was a little like watching their penalty kill and defense from like 3 years ago.
Except with that, it was less puck movement and it was more just they sat there and let the opponent fire away. Whereas this, they're just getting like ripped apart.
Yeah, I just mean like, I mean, Michigan used to be notoriously terrible for just leaving guys unchecked. And you just, like on a turnover, I mean, turnover in the end is a little different, but like when you're skating, you're moving the puck around and all of a sudden, like you just don't have multiple guys accounted for, it's like, well, what are you watching? But anyway, the other thing that happened, even up until this point, we haven't mentioned yet, which we probably should have, is like Mann kept making big saves. And there, Minnesota was creating chances, especially in the beginning of that second period, where defensemen would get beat, or the defense would just kind of capitulate in some sort of way, and Mann just bails them out. And he did that pretty much all game, keeping them without getting at least run off the ice. And obviously, he couldn't do anything about that one power play goal. The second goal happened a few minutes later, or actually closer towards the end of the second period. But this is one that we talked about a couple times afterwards. I was talking to another guy in the box, and he actually had a video of it, so we were breaking it down. But so Kent Johnson kind of gets a loose puck on the boards, and he can turn to the left, which his left would take him up the ice and towards the blue line.
There were two Minnesota defenders there, but there were two Michigan players breaking out of the zone.
So they're having to back up, you would think.
Yeah.
But he turns to the right, which is to go back into his own corner, and that's, I've yet to hear anyone who knows much about hockey say that's generally a good idea.
Well, it's a less good idea when there are two Minnesota players there.
Right.
I so mean, that was the classic, like, no, 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 no.
It's like throwing into double coverage or something.
Yeah, I mean, you
like,
see him take that turn, and you're just,
where are you going?
And then, you know, he gets converged upon, and from there, it just breaks down.
Yeah, and then they turn the puck over, and the guy walks down the slot. Rodzinski walks down the slot. Ciccolini bails on the slot because he thinks that the passer is, I think it was Myers at the time, has sort of a route to the net, even though it's from a sharp angle. Ciccolini bails from his defensive responsibility, and the puck goes right into the slot, and Brodzinski scores. And I don't want to say like we were waiting for that, but it was just these types of things were happening a lot throughout the second period, and that was just going to happen at some point where one of these pucks is going to go in, and it does, and it's 2-0. And well,
and I mean, Jacob Triscott on that play makes very little effort in trying to inhibit the player who then makes the pass to Brodzinski at the top.
And that's right.
Karinen on the backside doesn't do a great job either. I mean, that's just like everyone.
Well, Karinen takes care of his guy, if I remember correctly. He kind of rides him because they had a guy far post, and he kind of rode him off out of the play and tied him up. And that's kind of what you want to do from the backside defenseman, though, right?
It was a rough play all around. And so Karinen may come out a little bit better than everyone else there, but it was a systematic breakdown.
Yeah. And it started with Johnson just
And at that point,
walking into coverage,
Minnesota goes up 2-0 late in the second, and that was kind of like the this game's over sort of feeling.
Or see, I felt that way the next day. I didn't feel that way on Friday. I thought, okay, something could still happen potentially. And in the beginning of the third period, something did happen, and Ben Myers got the puck. And you were real impressed by this play, but he skates into the zone and goes by Power, who I thought did not do a great job of checking him or inhibiting him in any sort of way. He goes around a Mike Pasta and then around maybe Summers. I forget who the third guy was. And then Mann comes out to kind of shut down the angle on the side. He skates around him and scores a relatively easy empty net goal.
It was from a tough angle, though. By the time he got Mann down, the angle was not, I mean...
Which is what Mann was trying to do.
Yeah. Power probably could have played that a little bit better on the far side at the beginning of the play, but to go around three guys, to have the patience to wait, to get the goalie down and out, and then get a small window, and then hit it, I mean, that's a heck of a play.
Yeah. No, it was a good individual effort play.
And by the way, Ben Myers took, like, all of Minnesota's faceoffs in this game.
Okay.
Remember, Bailey had a tweet about this, but he took like 65 to 70% of all Minnesota's faceoffs. I don't remember seeing anything like that, at least in recent years.
Did you see the numbers of like his, did he win a bunch of them?
Yeah.
I assume. Yeah.
Michigan got killed in the faceoff in game one.
And we were surprised.
He didn't take as many in game two, and Michigan did do better in game two.
Well, there are some people who are just, I mean, that's what they do, right? Is they're good faceoff winners for whatever reason. So, at this point, it's 3-0, and then I think I'm kind of getting ready to take a few different notes and set up what we're doing for post-game and everything, because at that point, I was like, eh. And Kent Johnson comes screaming into the zone alone with an extra attacker, because they called a penalty, and he takes sort of this backhand shot from below the dot that is a very nice play, and just puts it, just under the bar in the corner, because LaFontaine plays it about as well as you can, and he just hits the head of a pin in the corner of the net, right?
I mean, the really impressive part of that play was getting around the defenseman, and then, he just lifts the backhander right over the shoulder, bar down. I mean, it's a heck of a play. They got on SportsCenter.
Did it?
I believe so. I think it was, like, number two that night, but...
That's kind of very Michigan, right? Where, like, they make a lot of great individual effort plays.
Well, that's kind of the story of Kent Johnson's prospect profile now.
Yeah. And that was pretty much it. Like, he scores on that. They get that penalty. So then, because in college, if a penalty's called and you score with an extra attacker, you also get the penalty, which I don't really understand.
Yeah, I don't get that at all.
So it's like, okay, if we score here, all of a sudden we're back in it. But Michigan takes a too many men call. And I think
there
that
were two
was,
of those.
They had two of those in that game.
Yeah. And I had a tweet that was like, that's coaching. Like, I mean, it is. Yes, there are new players that are not playing normally in the game. Okay, that can maybe be explained for one of them. But the second one, when you're on the power play, that just can't happen.
Yeah, and
it just can't happen.
It happened on the power play, which is like, you're not in a rush change. Like, sometimes you're like trying to rush a change because of a matchup or because of anything. But the defense, usually, if you want to sit in your own zone and change or something, the penalty kill is basically going to sit there and be like, sweet, kill 5 seconds. We're good with that. But... that was kind of like a very frustrating moment, which was probably the most frustrating moment until the end of the game when we were debating in the press box. It was 3-1, and someone says, can you pull the goalie at 3? And they're like, yeah, maybe even earlier. And he's like, earlier? And I could hear these two guys talking behind me. And Michigan never pulls the goalie.
Well, so the old philosophy was that you didn't pull the goalie until really late. That's hockey of the old days. If you watch... 70s, 80s games, a lot of times it doesn't happen until under a minute.
Sure.
The new philosophy, and this was something that Patrick Waugh started when he was coaching the Avalanche in the early 2010s, that if you're down two goals, you pull at 3 to 4 minutes left in the game. Because philosophy is that you need as much time as possible.
Right.
And if you give up an empty net goal at any point, then you're losing the game, and it doesn't matter if you lose by 3 versus 1, if you still lose. I mean, unless you're someone who really cares about goal differential, but...
this isn't Euro soccer. So.
Yeah, so Michigan, in theory, in this game, we're sitting there, and I was saying on the broadcast, like, okay, 3 minutes to go, is when we're looking at it. And we keep watching Strassman. It doesn't happen. 2:30 down to 2 minutes. It's not happening. And there were plenty of opportunities.
Oh, yeah. Michigan had the puck.
Yeah.
and you can see Strauss is like getting to the top of his crease, getting into the slot, kind of like looking over and nothing. And no one's looking down there because I started watching Mel and the other assistant coach who's like going to be down there waving him in. And no one's saying a thing. No one's even looking at him. No one's even looking down, looking back, looking down, like, all right, is this the time? Is this the time? No one's even making an eye contact. So he just sat there.
And then by the 30 or 45 seconds left, Michigan has a face-off, you know, after a whistle.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was like, well, okay, by now, why would you even bother? And they didn't. And
then they took a penalty. So it didn't even matter.
It was kind of like, remember the Wisconsin game a couple of years ago where Brian called Paul Chryst turtle because he was punting?
Yeah.
It was like that. I mean, it was Michigan turtling.
Yeah.
They made no effort to win this hockey game, which, look, they probably weren't going to win it. They were down 2 goals. Minnesota's a great defensive team. Whatever. You don't have your big guns.
But
sure.
You got to try. Yeah, that's the move.
It does not going to instill a lot of great morale in the locker room, I don't think, if you're not really trying to win the game.
I mean, do you think guys are going around high-fiving, being like, hey, we only lost by two? Have you ever done that?
No.
Okay. Not even in anything?
No.
Yeah. No, I haven't either. So, that was not maybe Mel's finest game that I've seen him coach. Not that Michigan was going to win, not that they weren't out talented, but then it's kind of like, okay, now we're raising other questions.
It was the first one that there was definitely coaching. I mean, yeah. I definitely left the game just sort of like,
what is this?
Huh? Okay.
Are you awake or? Yeah. And so Michigan outcourses Minnesota, they outshoot them, but the chances they gave up were way too dangerous. They couldn't really create a lot, and by the end of that game, you're like, all right, well, hopefully they get lucky in the second game, because if Minnesota played remotely close to that level, I mean, Michigan wasn't going to match it. I didn't think. I mean,
they were going to have to show something new.
So moving on to game two, I want to transition from what you were talking about when you're talking about coaching, because this is something that the guy who sits behind me mentioned to me, is that if you notice who started the game, it was the Van Wy line, and he was matched up against the Reedy line. And the Reedy line's probably their number one line.
Maybe.
Okay, well, that's who he wanted.
Yeah.
Apparently, you know, Michigan's physical checking line against, which, okay, fine. The second time through, the Reedy line comes out, it's against the Johnson-Pasta-Becker line, and they ended up getting a goal on it. And then that was when, you know, he was talking to me about it and Sean pointing it out. So I made a note of it. And then I made a note to watch the next time that Reedy's line came out onto the ice. And the next 2, 3, 4 times he came out on the ice, it was against the Van Wy line. So for whatever reason, I don't know if he out manipulated the matchup or whatever, but the time that Michigan got the bad matchup on between those two lines or against the Reedy line, that's where the first goal came from. And I mean, you'd have to, you know, ask a lot of questions and do a lot of digging deep. But my preliminary thought of that is like, that seems just sort of like a matchup mistake. And yeah, I mean, you don't always score a goal every time that happens. But when one happens, you can look at it and say, that would have been, you know, that's kind of a fixable thing.
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe you saw it differently.
I just think that you can't necessarily blame that all on coaching and that you expect your guys to be good enough to not have that happen, right? Like,
yeah, but I mean, there's...
You put out the wrong line or something, you can't get a perfect matchup. Like, the result of not matching it up perfectly every time can't be a goal whenever you get the wrong matchup.
No. Like, and it's a small sample size. I'm not saying that. It just seemed interesting to me that the next three times and the previous time the Reedy line was on the ice, they drew the Van Wy line. But that goal was basically what a shot from the point that was saved, and Reedy got the rebound and put it in past Mann, and I didn't think Mann really had a chance on that. And
that came very early in the game, and it was very much like, here we go.
Yep. It was like 5 minutes in, 4 minutes in.
Like, this is not going to be any different than the prior night.
And then Michigan kind of hangs around because Minnesota, I thought, played their worst stretch of the series during that the rest of that period.
They definitely cracked, and Luke Morgan got a couple chances.
One was a breakaway.
An abbreviated breakaway where he split between two dudes, and he got an okay shot away, but...
LaFontaine
played
really well. And then Becker got alone in the slot and had... There's no one around him off of a rebound. LaFontaine didn't really give up a whole lot of rebounds all weekend, but this one he did, and the puck just like jumps right over Becker's stick, and he swings and misses, and you're like, come on. And then Michigan takes a penalty, and it's 2-0. And you're just like, well.
And again, that goal was one where it's just like the rebound, and boom, it's right there.
Yep.
And that's just kind of how...
Well, I think that was the one that Reedy knocks out of the air, right to Walker's stick. And it's and so it doesn't even get to Mann. So Mann's tracking the puck, and it changes direction, falls right to the second stick, and it's... You know, it's in the net. And at that point, I texted one of my friends. I was like, well, unless unless they do a lot of things, unless Minnesota just really just chokes hard and just starts giving up a ton of bad chances. I mean, this game was all, for all intents and purposes, over at that point, I thought, after the first period.
Yeah.
I mean.
And right after that happens, Summers takes a 10-minute penalty, which apparently was throwing the puck down the ice.
Something, I think he grabbed the puck with the stick and shot it down, but it wasn't like against the boards right there. It was like all the way to the other end, so people had to go get it, and like that's, I guess,
should have taken
upon.
His skate off and thrown it.
Could have been like Happy Gilmore trying to stab someone with it.
Well, so apparently a lot of players are throwing items around the playing surfaces.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's a good reference. I've never seen... The best part about that in the Florida game was the referee announced it as... He called the penalty for throwing a shoe 20 yards
down the field.
which was pretty
I love
phenomenal.
That. It's like the one time that I remember I was watching a game and they were like, false start, everyone but the center.
That's as specific as it gets. So I thought that Michigan had more chances in this game. They just... It was like... I think I wrote in the breakdown that like... It was like watching a game from the last couple of years where, you know, it wasn't that Michigan never had good chances. They just didn't have finishers really on the ice. The individual skill talent that we talk about, that Johnson created the goal, the Bortolo goal against Wisconsin, like those, the Brisson pass to Bortolo against Penn State, things like that, they don't really have without those guys. And you don't really get that elite finishing, so you need some either puck luck or you need some bad turnovers or some sloppy goalie play, and Minnesota gave them very little of that. A little bit in the second game, but not a whole lot. And so,
and then I mean, Michigan gets those chances, they don't get on the board, and then they're just waiting for, you know, another opportunity. And of course, before they can get anything, really, we get this week's avalanche of goals in the late second period.
No, it was pretty early, I think. I mean, they came out... Well, no,
yeah,
you're
it was,
right.
It was late second period.
You're right. Well, yeah. You're right. I'm sorry.
And again, Michigan's on the penalty kill, and again, it just feels like everyone is open, and...
Because they were.
Yep.
And they had three shots from, like, 2 feet away.
A player on the goal mouth wraps it around, save, kicks out to the side, and I think it was Nelson that came in on the far side that puts it in. That's 3-0, and then the avalanche is specifically, like, 15 seconds later, where Keaton Pearson's behind the net, makes a beautiful pass to no one in particular, and...
It was a great centering pass.
Yeah, but it was to the Minnesota players, and... player, I think it was Kester from the blue line, steps up and wires it in. And at that point, they had to yank Mann again on the sort of psychological pity pull.
Like, if you're Mann, do you pull yourself and be like... I mean, I've done that one time in...
Like when Cade pulled himself from the game like 3 weeks ago.
I've played mini soccer before and I was less than impressed with our defense. And so I pulled myself and I was like, if you guys want soccer ball shot at your head, go for it. But like, I'm done for tonight if you're not going to defend. But it felt like that because, you know, and Portillo came in and played well and Mann played really well. And he did for the most part against Penn State last week. And, you know, this has nothing to do with goaltending. I mean, LaFontaine played well, but the difference is that Minnesota didn't surrender an avalanche of like A-plus chances.
Yeah.
And Michigan did, and Mann made some of those saves, but he didn't make all of them, which is never something a goalie is supposed to or can really even do.
I mean, we learned this week that Strauss Mann, and we learned last week that Strauss Mann is not 1998 Dominik Hasek.
Okay.
More tonight at 11.
Yeah. So, I mean, after that, I think my notes were, what else should we talk about? And Michigan had a shot that went wide. And then the last one was another open look that went wide. And it just felt like, okay, this is it. Like,
but shout out Minnesota.
Wow. But that's part of it, yeah.
I mean, they're a very, very good team. It's going to take a lot to, you know, beat them. They're, I think, probably one of the three or four best teams in the country. I think you can throw Nodak, maybe Denver, maybe Duluth out there. Boston College is playing really well. But Minnesota's in that category, too. And I think if Michigan can correct some of the things, we'll get into this in the second segment, they can absolutely be in Minnesota's level. But they're not there right now. And they weren't going to be without their players. And, you know, Minnesota's, they're just well-polished. And that's part of the advantage that comes with bringing everybody back, right? They have an experienced team, a lot of guys that know what to do, and you could just see that. They're well-coached. They're players that know where they're supposed to be. There are no real mistakes, well-communicated. I mean, it's a well-rounded team, and it kind of is reminiscent of the Notre Dame team from 17-18 when they ripped off, I think it was 18 straight wins that season, and they were,
right.
At one point, they were like 24-3 or something, and Minnesota could easily get to that point. Now, if there's an upshot, it's that Notre Dame sort of stumbled like a drunken, you know, someone leaving the pub, let's say, an Irish person leaving the pub. But for the remainder...
Picking on Irish people?
Yeah, for the remainder of the schedule, it's the 1840s now, but...
there are no potatoes.
And, I mean, they kind of sleptwalked their way to the national title game. They won like six straight games late in the season on last second or overtime goals. They won the Big Ten that way.
Yeah.
They won both of their tournament games in the first round. They beat Michigan that way.
Yes.
And then they finally lost. But the point was, by the end of the season, other teams had caught up to them. So maybe that's Minnesota, what's going on in Minnesota now where they're clicking. But, you know, they also might stay this way. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, the interesting thing is that, like you said, this is what happens when you bring everybody back. And last year, Minnesota had a lot of these players, but they weren't nearly this good. And that is something to... you can think about for Michigan is like, okay, they have all these really good players and they're good, but they're not really good right now. They might get better, but if you get these guys back and they mature and learn how to play certain things that Minnesota, you look at the Minnesota team and individual players, but as a team as well, have done, you know, Michigan can certainly do this next year. You know, maybe this year, we will see. We're going to talk about this in the next segment as soon as, you know, I probably finish the sentence. But it's sort of like part of the track, right? Like you go through the stages that you go through, and one of them is being freshmen and sophomores that are really talented but are not really sure what you're doing to becoming sophomores, juniors, or junior seniors that now have some more of an idea.
Guys have to learn how to play. They have to learn how to win.
Yep.
There's the legendary story of the 1983 Oilers playing the Islanders.
And yes.
After the Islanders win their fourth straight title, the Oilers walk past their dressing room and they see the Islanders players not even really celebrating, just in the locker room icing their wounds of all the physical beatings they took, and they weren't even celebrating the championship. And that was the story goes that that's how the Oilers learned what you need to do to win.
Yeah.
Those are things you learn, and, you know, maybe getting bulldozed at Yost and random Tuesday and Wednesday in December will be that moment for this team.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458, or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
So we thought we would take this segment after talking about the same game essentially twice, as we've done in, well, a couple times this year now, and just kind of talk about, all right, Michigan's played 10 games, the first half of the season. What did you think? What does it mean? You know, whatever. First thing is the standings is that Minnesota, like we just mentioned, is in first place with 24 points. Wisconsin is in second place, who's had a nice first half of the season, and they have 16, so they're 8 points back. And I don't think they've played
each
other.
What's the point per game, though?
Three, isn't it?
Well, no, I mean, like...
Oh, points per game?
Yeah, like what? Because different teams have played a certain number of games.
Ah.
I have never looked at the standings, so I'm hearing this for the first time.
Minnesota is getting 3 points per game. Yep. They have not lost or given away a point. Wisconsin has 16 points in 8 games, so they're getting 2, which is still really good. Ohio State now has played 8 games, and they have 10 points.
Okay.
Notre Dame has played 6 games. They've played 6 games. And they have 9 points.
Okay. So Notre Dame's ahead of Ohio State.
Yeah, in points per game.
Yeah.
And Michigan has played 8 games and has 8 points.
Yeah, so Michigan's behind both those teams.
Yes. And then Penn State has 6 games and 3 points, getting all 3 against Michigan.
But they swept Arizona State.
Well, so did we.
But Arizona State swept, who was it, Wisconsin? Like,
yes.
Arizona State should count. That's my new petition.
Ah, they'd probably have more points than they might have. They would have more points than Michigan because they would have 3 Big Ten wins. They'd have 9 points.
Well, no, we would be ahead of them because we would have 2 wins against them.
That's true. Oh, you've just made this part of the segment very convoluted. Or
point is, Michigan's being ripped off because their 2 best games didn't count in Big Ten standings.
Now you're starting to sound like a Michigan fan. There we go. Yeah. Michigan, they always get the raw end of the stick. Anyway. So they're in 5th place, which is like, I mean, did you think they were going to be in 5th place after the Wisconsin series?
No.
I mean, I was like, they might be in 1st.
This would not be the most unrealistic scenario if we turn the clocks back to November 1st or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, you have a whole thing about this.
About what?
About how Michigan does in different months.
Oh, well, that no, that's about? Not. Oh. I was just saying, if we go back to before the season and you told me at this point Michigan would be in 5th, I'd in a tight Big Ten, I'd be like, okay, I can believe that.
In a tight Big Ten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're 5th, but it's not like there's 4 teams vastly better than them. There's one that stands atop the pyramid, and then it's kind of just a jumble after that.
I mean,
where all the other teams are beating the other teams.
Wisconsin's
okay, but Michigan swept Wisconsin. I don't care about the standings. I talk about what do the teams look like.
Okay.
And one team is playing very, very well, and the other teams are all kind of beating each other at various, I mean, some teams are beating other teams, and it's just kind of a mix after that. But yeah, what's frustrating about this is that Michigan got the finished product at the start. And then have just slowly worked
back. Is that a thing?
They've worked backwards.
They're like the Benjamin Button of college hockey teams.
Yes, that's the tagline for this episode.
Is it? Okay. It's good that we know what it is now. So they're in 5th, which is like, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of where Michigan's been the last few years.
So Michigan has this habit of, and this is what you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Where... So Michigan comes out of the gate ready to play. Now, part of it is they always put at least one sacrificial lamb on the schedule.
Right.
But if you look at Mel Pearson's record per month in the 3 seasons prior to this, he's 10-6-1 in October.
Which is all right.
So the team comes out, plays pretty decently to start. 6-15-4 in November. And by the way, this last week is kind of the equivalent of November. I mean, it's...
Okay.
Right. Because November would normally be like your 4th or 5th or 6th or 7th or 8th series, and that's what Michigan has now been in.
Basically, their last 2 series, like Penn State and Minnesota, which they are 1-3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's 4-4-4 in December, very nice round record.
Which
right there.
Usually comes to like playing Minnesota and Michigan State a couple of times, it feels
like. Yeah, well, there was his second season, remember, they tied like 5 games in a row.
Oh, yeah.
And they were all in December. And like the last one was in January, but
4-4-4.
Yeah, January he's 12-8-1. Good,
which is better, sort of like October.
February 13-6-3,
which that's really good.
And then March is 6-6 because that's where you're playing tougher games. So
what's his record in April?
he has played one game in April.
Yep. Yeah. I was seeing if you remembered that.
Yeah, I was trying to think if that was in April or not. And I was like, yeah, it was in April.
Yeah.
But anyway, point is that, you know, all things considered, for whatever reason, his teams come out decently the first few series, and then they just get hammered. And for the fourth straight year, we head into the Christmas break with a really bad taste in the mouth. I mean, the only one that wasn't that bad was the second year, and that was because they were tying every game, which was still not satisfying.
But they were tying teams like bad Minnesota teams. And
at
like,
least they weren't getting pile-drived like last year. So...
Yeah. No, all right.
I don't know why this is, but...
Do you think people are turning to us to find out why?
I mean, I don't have any answers.
Yeah. You're not Radio Shack.
I mean, for me, here's the thing. We can talk about the standings all you want, but what I really care about is how the team is going to look when the games matter and in March, right? And so the reason I am okay with Mel is that his teams are ready to play when the games actually matter.
They have been, yep.
And, you know, again, his February record stands out. And so what you have to kind of believe in is that he can do that with this team and that they can be rounded and they can be ready to go out of the gate.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think my frustration comes in with like, hey, what if we went into a February where we didn't need to win all our games?
Well, this year they're 500 as opposed to last year where they were just digging out of the crater the entire second half of the season. This year they're just in the mix and now they can kind of take off. But that assumes
a lot
that he has the team, you know, more rounded into shape in the second half.
All right. So let's go through it. We can just, I just broke things down into different parts of hockey and we'll just kind of give our thoughts. Goalies.
I have no issues.
I mean, it's been, I mean, Mann has played as well. I mean, he doesn't probably have the save percentage because he's not getting the defensive help, but like he's played as well as I've seen him and he's played really well last year, right? And I mean, I see nothing. He's, I mean, how many goals that you can remember were on him? One. The Penn State goal that started the second game?
Potentially.
Right. And Portillo's been fine. I mean, we haven't really seen him. I mean, he's played, like, what, the second half of two blowout games and done fine.
Hasn't. You didn't said allow that he, a goal in that one, and then and that wasn't until the end of the other game.
You said that your takeaway from part of Saturday was that he's Martin Brodeur.
Well, he didn't play any games on Saturday, but yes.
Oh, yeah.
It was Wednesday. But yeah, Portillo
what day,
was...
What day is it? I don't even
Portillo
know.
Was coming way out of the net. I mean, he was playing pucks, like, into the, you know, pit of the corner and, like, almost out to the circle. And I don't know if he's just happy to be on the ice and he wants to...
Ooh, the puck!
get his money's worth while he's out there. Yeah. But that's at least an interesting thing to talk about if he were ever the starter.
All right, what about the defense?
It's kind of interesting.
This is kind of layered.
Because...
They're good on offense.
Well, the first four games, I didn't really think there was any... I mean, I thought they were fine the first four games. And that's what's kind of odd about this season is there isn't a coherent narrative, right? You get two games where it's like, wow, this is the best team I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Two
which
games,
is what the Arizona State head coach said.
Two games where it's like, yeah, this team's pretty good. I mean, this team should be a top five team.
Went to Madison, got 5 or 6 points, depending on how you want the standings to go.
Then another two games where it's like, oh, we got stuck in the mud with Notre Dame. Then two games where it's like, that wasn't great. And then...
the roller coaster in Happy Valley.
And then two games where you didn't have half your team and you just got obliterated. And so it just is... Each two-game series is a different installment. And it just hasn't... Nothing's been the same. And...
Yeah, there's no, like... cohesive trend or narrative throughout.
Because we, you know, you can talk about, oh, Michigan made these turnovers against Notre Dame. Sure, but it gets amplified when you play Notre Dame because there's only two scoring chances per game. And when you give them up, then it just becomes so much worse. And were substantially worse this week against Minnesota than they were against Penn State. And they were substantially worse against Penn State than they were against Notre Dame. And it's just been a slow decline each week.
I don't like that.
But, I mean...
But the defense, okay. So we've talked about this a little bit, where you pointed this out to me, I think, earlier. You said, you know, one-on-one, almost every defenseman on this roster is pretty good. And anytime someone's coming in on a rush and they're going one-on-one against most any of these guys, you generally feel pretty comfortable with them shielding them to the corner or getting a stick or a body on them, whatever, making a nice individual play. The problem more becomes when the puck gets in the zone and the offense is trying to set up. And this is a little bit overlapping with the penalty kill issues, where when the puck starts getting passed around, you don't have very active sticks all the time. You don't have people always communicating where to go and what to do. And teams are pretty much able to pass the puck through and around Michigan, not at will, but like easier than you would like for a team that has some sort of postseason goals.
Yeah, I mean, the team defense is the kind of big problem here. And that their team defense just isn't really well set up. The players aren't communicating. And then you just have plays like the one that we talked about earlier with the Kent Johnson wrong turn play.
Yeah.
Where it's just the Keystone Cops.
Well, and you have a chance to get out. And you have a chance to get out.
There's three or four players and they're just whiffing and, I mean, you know, bring out the Three Stooges.
And that's just, and that's not 100% on just the defensemen. I mean, the forwards kind of play a
little
bit into
that, too. Well, we talked about that last week with Bortolo and Brisson, who weren't there this week. But
right.
Some of those players were not as active in plays as they should have been. And it just was a team that defensively, after Wednesday, just really looked like they needed a break.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the best way you can really put it. They need some time to sit back and regroup.
Yeah, that's... We're not doing actual grades, but if we were, they probably would not get a very good grade, I don't think.
I mean, Truscott was pretty good for a while, had some rough games last week. Jack Summers has really struggled pretty much the whole year.
Yeah.
Blankenberg's been pretty good offensively. Defensively, he hasn't really stood out one way or the other, except when he's getting bodied behind his own net.
Which is a problem.
Owen Power is fine.
He looks like a really talented freshman who does things really well because his stick is about 30 feet long.
Yeah.
And he covers so much of the ice when he skates. But, you know, he doesn't always have a stick on the ice. He doesn't always play as hard as you want. He sometimes jumps into the play at times and turns and is in the wrong place. And, you know, that's going to happen when you have really good skating defensemen. They're going to want to jump in the play. It's just that the really, really good ones know when to and when not to, and it's not like, oh, I can go up on the rush. I mean, you know, we've found him in the offensive corner boards, I think, more times than you would expect to see a primary defenseman. But, I mean, you know, and maybe he's being coached to do that. That part I can't speak to. It's just odd when you find guys in a position like, it's sort of like when you're watching soccer and you have like a center back that keeps finding himself near the net and you're like, well, wait a minute, if you're up here, who's back there?
And then you have Keaton Pearson, who had some really good games to start the season.
Yeah.
Has had some rough moments over the last several weeks. And then York, fine.
York's been sort of a DZ.
Has created some things, has some issues in his own end.
He looks like he has upside, but he doesn't look refined. He doesn't look like what you would want to see, I would say.
Again, the tough thing about this is, like, if we were doing this after Wisconsin, it's one thing. And then after this, it's another thing.
But the reality is that they played against a really tough team in Notre Dame who is going to give teams trouble. And then you play against a high-flying offense that doesn't have a lot of finishing power, but is a team that's going to come at you in waves as an offense. And then you play against probably the best coach, best organized, and probably the scariest team Michigan's going to face unless they get deep in the tournament. And, you know, the defense didn't look great in really any of those. And that's sort of the thing that worries me a little bit, is as the competition has ramped up, the defensive performance has dropped off.
So let me just tabulate this real quick.
Okay.
Okay. They, in the first six games, allowed 9 goals.
Okay.
Actually, for the first 7, they allowed 10 goals.
Okay.
The last 3 games, they've allowed 16 goals.
Yeah. And we've put approximately 1 of those on the goalie.
Yeah. So you had 7 games that maybe Strauss was bailing them out for some parts, but they were a pretty darn good defensive team. And then The wheels just have come off in a spectacular fashion.
And you start to wonder, you know, the other thing that happened in some of those games is they started getting forechecked. I mean, Penn State started doing that and turning them over a little bit. Minnesota did that from time to time. Notre Dame picks and chooses when they do that. But that was the other thing that you know, I wrote down later on that we could talk about, but we could bring it up here, is that, you know, they struggled with that against Wisconsin too. And it didn't really cost them in terms of giving up a lot of goals, but they didn't look smooth coming out of their own end, and they didn't look like the team that you'd want with the crazy speed and skill flying up the ice that sort of overwhelmed Arizona State. And part of that was because I think you put pressure on guys at the back end, and you know, they had some nice breakouts, but probably not at the rate that you would want to see from a team that's going to overwhelm you with skill and speed.
Yep.
So, yeah. The forwards, like, I think for the most part, like, we can discount, this is a point where, okay, we can, in this instance, we can more or less discount these last two games because they didn't have, you know, four of their probably top six forwards, and that's what you look at when you look at a hockey sheet, is you look at, you know, who are your top six forwards. I mean, those are the guys that score the goals, and then you have a couple of a third line and a checking line, and or you used to, and maybe it's different, but you still classify people as top six guys, and Michigan was basically without at least three or four of them.
So Beniers and Bortolo have been the two creators.
Correct.
Beecher has kind of been a pumpkin offensively.
A pumpkin? We're past Halloween, buddy. Is he a candy cane?
No.
Okay.
Brisson has...
Brisson?
Yeah. Has made some good passes, taken some decent shots, mostly all on the power play, though.
Yeah.
Is very treacherous defensively, and just has a lot of room to grow as an offensive player, too. Kent Johnson is the most anonymous point per game guy I've ever seen.
Because he is, basically. He's got like 10 points.
Yeah, but you never notice him.
No, because he makes...
He makes
one or two highlight plays.
He made two highlight plays, and that's it.
Yeah.
But isn't generating enough consistent pressure. And outside of that, you know, Luke Morgan, Pastajov, they've improved. They're not game breakers.
They're guys.
Yeah. And Granowitz can do a little bit.
More or less the same guy.
Then you have the Van Wy line, which is the Van Wy line.
Yep.
That's kind of your offense. And so you can get carried a long way by Bortolo and Beniers creating, yep. But it would become a much more explosive and multidimensional team if Beecher could do something, if Brisson could perform a little bit better and actually add something, you know, different to the offense.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that, you know, they've scored a lot of goals up until the last weekend, and, you know, when they've lost, again, you know, I guess they didn't against Notre Dame a ton, but the forwards have generally come close to expectations, maybe a little, maybe not quite, but the issue more has been on the back end, and then on the penalty kill.
And if there's one thing to fault the forwards for, it's the penalties. Because
that's
the defensemen haven't taken many penalties. I mean, let me look up what the PIM are for the breakdown between the forwards and defensemen. But,
yeah.
I mean, think about all the bad penalties we talk about. It's always Brisson, yeah. Granowitz, Pastajov. I mean, it's never a defenseman.
Yeah, they don't really take that many that I can remember.
Which is pretty concerning because the forwards shouldn't be the ones taking the penalties. I mean,
and because that generally means where are they taking them?
Yeah.
Probably in the offensive zone, which has like been the most one of the just. It's sort of my like I have a thing with baseball where you have a runner on third and less than two outs, and if you don't score him at a high enough rate, my head explodes. And that's sort of my thing about hockey is when you have forwards that take penalties in the offensive zone. Like, there are some that are hustle plays and some you're trying to make something happen or whatever, and I get those. But other times, like, when you're putting your team a man down because you're just being lazy, skating back, and you trip a guy or he has a step on you and you hook him or something, like, those are the kinds of things, especially when you don't have a great penalty kill, that you just can't do.
Yeah, so the total is 10 of the 46 penalties Michigan has taken are by defensemen. 10 of 46.
And that's pretty good, right? For a defenseman?
Yeah. I mean, that's generally speaking, the people who take the penalties tend to be defensemen unless you've got an enforcer who could be a defenseman, but generally they're forwards.
Right.
Marty McSorley was a defenseman, sort of. But, you know, and you think about it, so they've taken one 10-minute misconduct. They also had a 5-minute major. The misconduct was on Summers for an obscure thing.
Which is...
But it didn't shorthand the team.
No, and it got him off the ice.
But the one major... the one major was Nolan Moyle, and...
Yeah.
So then
and
you,
they killed it.
Yes, that's the one thing they killed. And yeah. So, you know, you mean Brendan Brisson's got 5 penalties. That's not great. And you just kind of go down the list, and there's just too many penalties being taken. Granowitz, 3. Pastajov, 2. And when each forward is taking 2 or 3 penalties each, a lot of those happening in the neutral zone or the offensive zone or just inside the blue line, you're not going to do well enough. And you look down the list, and Michigan's taken 46 penalties. The opponent's taken 35. And that has definitely that's been exacerbated the last couple of weeks. But they've been on the penalty kill way too much and not nearly enough on the power play. I mean, we haven't really gotten to see the power play work much in weeks.
Speaking of the penalty kill, do you want to guess what their penalty kill percentage is?
77%.
Ooh, that's actually pretty close. 73%.
Oh, okay.
Which is even worse, and it's not good at all.
Small sample size.
Sure. Kinda. But I'm not, like, screaming about, oh man, how did they give up a goal there? Or, there's no way they're gonna score against this penalty kill. I mean, like, it's not like they haven't gotten that they keep getting unlucky or something. I mean, teams have basically been able to move them. I mean, Minnesota did and Penn State did like crazy. And I mean, I don't know. It's to the point now where, you know, something needs to be done because they're just.
And they were at 86, 87% last year.
Yeah, and that's fine. Like, this doesn't need to be one of those... 86%
is really good.
Yeah, this doesn't need to be one of those, like, Ohio State-Notre Dame penalty kills that's at, like, 93%. Like, this team doesn't need that in order to be successful, but they can't be at 73.
Scotty Bowman's old adage was that if you add up the penalty kill and power play percent, it should be above 100. And so, if you have a power play that can function at 25, then in theory, you don't have to do that well. But if there's this massive imbalance of penalties, which there is at the moment, and there has been in several weeks,
yeah,
then it's a problem. So if they can just be 80-85% on the penalty kill and 20-25% of the power play, but be taking similar numbers,
yeah,
then you're fine.
Well, their power play, you want to guess what their power play scoring rate is?
I have no idea.
28.6.
Does that include, like, the 30 seconds they get before they have too many men on the ice and that kind of thing? I mean,
I assume so. I mean, that's a penalty. I mean, that's a power play.
Yeah, so they've been really effective on the power play, but they haven't gotten many chances recently.
No, and part of that was because, you know, a lot of their skill was off the ice and
sure.
Just not going to generate that. And for whatever reason, they don't call penalties against opposing teams in Hockey Valley. So, you know, whatever. But their power play has been good. Like you said, we haven't seen it functioning at a high level in a while because they faced Notre Dame and then didn't really get any of the next couple series. But, you know, against Wisconsin, it was good. Against Arizona State, it was great.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that as everyone comes back from juniors, the power play is going to be good again. I mean, you would expect that. You'd see who's on the ice and you think, okay, you know, some of the best goals they've scored this year have been power play goals that the defense just, or the kill or the goalie didn't even really have a chance on.
Which, side note, apparently Johnny Beecher has COVID. He was sent home from the camp and Bortolo was cut. It is unclear if that's related to Beecher's COVID because they're roommates. It was not said if he had to be sent home because of exposure or exactly what was happening
there. All right. But is your guess that USA looked at Thomas Bortolo and said, you're not good enough for this team?
Based on the forwards they kept, probably not. But unless they're playing like a super defensive style or something, then maybe that happened. But Canada's got 20 first-round picks on the World Junior roster. 20.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's the record for their programming.
But Canada's stacked. I mean, Alex,
well, sure, but the point is,
Alex Newhook's on the fourth line.
Team USA needs all the talent they can get to try and win that tournament this year. And you just have to think the Bortolo thing was related to the Beecher COVID. But regardless, Michigan will not have as many people on the actual roster as we previously thought.
And they could have used him against Minnesota. At least Bortolo.
Yeah.
Unless he has COVID. Or is related to someone who does. Or is around someone. I don't really know the best way to phrase that. So
the other thing to point out was apparently all the European teams were going to fly to Alberta on one plane together, and they ran out of room.
Well, yeah. How big are these planes?
I don't know.
Why don't you just put them on the tugboat?
There was a story on Twitter yesterday. I think it was like the Swedish team got bumped off the plane. And they were waiting around to get a new plane to fly to
Edmonton. Why was it Sweden?
I don't know. But they were supposed to, it was like Germany, Slovakia, Sweden, Russia, like a lot of the countries are supposed to fly together, and then it didn't.
Maybe I should be on hockey Twitter more. Okay, so then the last couple things we'll get through, because I'm not sure anyone's still listening to this, but so the transition game I thought was up and down. It started all right, and then in the last few weeks, kind of like everything else on this team, has sort of become dodgy. And, you know, that's going to, you know, we talked about this at the beginning of the year. You're going to give up some chances like this because you're going to be playing aggressively and your defensemen are going to join rushes and they have two or three defensemen that score goals. So it makes sense to do that. You just can't give up, you know, a ton of great chances the other way. And Michigan will give up a couple at the beginning of the year and then they'll create a ton. So there is that trade-off that you have. The problem is that they haven't created all those amazing rushes the way that they did probably to start the year. So the transition stuff is, to me, like, I don't know. I think that given where the defense is right now, like, you have to lock some of those things down a little bit more. You need to be positionally sound and make sure that you're not giving away goals and just kind of bleeding them, because they're doing that in other areas of the ice. So I don't know. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that? Or
not particularly.
Not really. Okay. So we talked a little bit about the silly penalties and everything. I think, you know, the thing about this seems like they have a ton of talent, but they kind of play some playground hockey, and they don't stay always structurally sound. And the more organized teams that we've seen Michigan face, like Notre Dame and like Minnesota, have gotten Michigan off of their games and kind of shut down a lot of their high-powered attack. And
well, we came into this year sort of saying a concern is that it's going to be ragged and undisciplined. And then the first week, we're like, wow, that was really precise.
Yeah.
And well-coached. And then
second week wasn't quite as strong.
But it's still pretty good.
It's all right. Yeah.
And then it just kind of cascaded from there. And now we're back to the sort of, this is kind of just the circus.
And it kind of wonders if that's, you know, we got, you know, unfortunately, from our football allegory of the week, is did we get Minnesota'd? Because Michigan played an Arizona State team that hadn't played in a while, and they played a Wisconsin team that was out without their number one center, and then without their number two center, he got hurt, and they just didn't really have the talent to kind of keep up with Michigan in the end.
By the way, Michigan played 10 games in 26 days, so...
Well, so did everybody else.
Not really. Other teams haven't played as many games, or
they played like
played
games
later. I mean, point is, Michigan played a lot. They didn't get a lot of time to correct things. Now they'll get time, and we'll see what it looks like in January.
Yep, and we will be back next week with a question and answer session, and hopefully, maybe at some point, a schedule for January, maybe?
I'm expecting it to come out 2 days before the first game. Thank you for listening to Michigan HockeyCast 3.6. I'm Alex Drain. For David Nasternik and myself, we'll be back next week, answer your questions, but only if they're interesting.